This is the Bob Soucy Show on Patriots.com Radio.
Perrine in the backfield off Brady's left hip. Amendola started in motion. Brady takes the snap. Rolls right, throws to the end zone. Catches Brady. Touchdown, Danny Amendola!
The Bob Soucy Show is your source for in-depth Patriots coverage and all things NFL. Join Bob for exclusive interviews, statistical breakdowns, and the best coverage of your New England Patriots.
Gostowski trying to win it in overtime. The snap, the spot, the kick is airborne to the upright, and the kick is a game winner!
Join the conversation by calling the Ace Ticket Hotline at 855-PATS-500 or email the show at webradio@patriots.com.
Left foot forward for the quarterback. Hands extend, takes the snap, retreats in the pocket, under a rush, throws across the middle, touchdown, Rob Gronkowski!
Now, here's your host, the radio voice of your New England Patriots, Bob Soucy.
And hello again, everyone. We welcome you back to the Bob Soucy Show from inside our Subway Fresh broadcast studios here at Gillette Stadium. Long time, no talk, and good to have you with us. Hope you had a good 2 weeks since our last conversation before the Pats traveled out to Green Bay, of course, continuing on to the West Coast as the second leg of their two-city road trip unfolded Sunday night, coming off that loss to the Packers 26-21 in a thrilling football game, well played by two very good teams, and perhaps a prelude to the postseason. And then the Patriots taking on a team certainly in contention for the postseason in the San Diego Chargers, one of the hottest teams in the National Football League, coming in with a three-game winning streak, riding off an overtime, a come-from-behind win over the Baltimore Ravens 34-33 the week before. And the Patriots held the Chargers to one offensive touchdown, shut out San Diego in the second half on its own turf at Qualcomm Stadium, and won that game by the 23-14 final. Steven Gostkowski, of course, applying most of the offense much of the way before Tom Brady eventually drew the Pats within one with a touchdown throw to Rob Gronkowski, who became the first tight end in NFL history to have 4-10 touchdown plus seasons in his career. He and Antonio Gates had an opportunity Sunday night to achieve that distinction, and it was Gronkowski who was the first, of course, to double digits in 2014 with his 10th touchdown catch that made it a 14-13 game. And later, Gostkowski would give the Patriots the advantage with another field goal, his third of the evening, before Tom Brady delivered the dagger to Julian Edelman, a catch and run en route to a touchdown over the Chargers, and the Pats winning before a raucous crowd at Qualcomm Stadium. And it was very much a Patriots crowd. Really remarkable to see the number of navy blue shirts or white jerseys with navy blue numerals outlined in red, of course, with the Flying Elvis logo, in attendance at Qualcomm Stadium. The crowd roared when the Patriots took the field. There was even a loud boo collectively when the Chargers came out on the field. So the Patriots certainly revved up in many respects because of those in attendance, whether fans traveled from the East Coast or points in between or reside on the West Coast and simply had an opportunity for the first time in a while to see the Patriots in Southern California. They came out ready to support their team. And while the Pats struggled much of the way offensively, they did take a 3-0 advantage, but they had to settle for a field goal, quite frankly. Instead of a first and goal to go leading to a touchdown, it was a first and goal to go, and eventually a snap on second down from the 1.5 and another on third down from the 1.5 that led to a field goal by Gostkowski. The Patriots fell behind on the next drive. San Diego with its lone offensive touchdown, jumping in front 7-3, getting a defensive score on a Darrell Stuckey fumble return after Brandon LaFell made a catch across the middle and fumbled the ball. The first turnover by a Patriot other than its quarterback in 2014. Part of a remarkable job by the team overall this year in ball security. And again, with that rare giveaway by the Patriots, a defensive score for San Diego and a 14-3 advantage by the Chargers in front of a home crowd, but again, a crowd that very much was partisan toward the Patriots, and perhaps the energy from those in attendance transferred over to the team. Patriots players and even head coach Bill Belichick certainly outspoken in the aftermath about the energy and about the lift they got, the confidence they got from those in attendance. So a job well done by so many of you who download this podcast. If you can't stream it live from California, or as I mentioned, points in between, had a chance on Saturday night to visit a pep rally in San Diego, players in San Diego. Great job there by everybody involved in running that show. Sam Bam Cunningham, along with Mike Haynes. You talk about two of the all-time greats in this franchise's history, two of the great players at their respective positions, of course, in NFL history, and in the case of Mike Haynes, not only a Patriot Hall of Famer, but an NFL Hall of Famer, Pro Football Hall of Famer. It's one of the great cornerbacks in the history of the National Football League. In attendance, and as well, Scott Solak was there to pump up the crowd, as was a San Diego product, Stephen Neal, the former Patriot lineman, who, of course, made his name as a collegiate wrestling champion and one of the nation's and one of the world's best freestyle wrestlers before landing a job on the Patriots offensive line. So it was really a great time on Saturday night, and for yours truly, the first experience at a Patriots pregame tailgate with so many fans turning out. Really a wonderful time there, and again, a bit of a precursor to what we were to experience Sunday night at Qualcomm Stadium, with so many Patriot fans so loyal to the team turning out in great numbers and, of course, in full throat. And we invite you to join us today on the Bob Soucy Show here on Patriots.com radio by calling our Ace Ticket hotlines at 855-PATS-500, 855-PATS-500, or 508-298-0398. 508-298-0398. You can also email us at webradio@patriots.com. That's webradio@patriots.com. And coming up on today's show, we're scheduled to get a visit from Daron Harmon, the Patriots safety in his second year out of Rutgers. We expect to talk with my broadcast partner on the Patriots radio network, Scott Solak, just back from Southern California. And in fact, as I speak, in the process of recording couple of different TV shows with Patriots-related programming on local affiliates this weekend to be aired and, of course, to be archived as well on Patriots.com. So just had a conversation with Bill Belichick. They took us through the Dolphins and as well some plays from the other day with the Belustrators. You can look forward to that at the end of the week, again, on Patriots All Access and as well as Patriots.com. And Scott Solak hopefully will have time to come down the hallway here at Gillette Stadium if that time does allow itself and pay a visit to us to talk about the win over San Diego and, of course, look ahead to the matchup in wait with the Miami Dolphins as the Pats come back home Sunday for a 1 o'clock kickoff, beginning the season-ending stretch of three straight games against divisional foes. And for the Patriots, coming off a win in San Diego that clinches their 12th consecutive double-digit victory season. That means 12 straight years of 10 wins or more for the Patriots, again, with still three to play, having won 8 of 9. Now they can clinch the AFC East Championship at home. It would be their 6th in a row and their 11th in the last 12 years. Remarkable what this team has done dominating the AFC East. And, of course, being able, in the era of free agency and salary cap restrictions and player movement in the NFL, to string together another 10-win season at least. And the Pats have done just that. And, again, heading home to Gillette from San Diego with that impressive defensive performance, a job well done by the special teams as well, and the Patriots prevailing 23-14. Now let's talk to one of those fans who's online from Florida, all the way from Florida, checking in on the Ace Ticket Hotline as we turn to our first caller, Nick Baby Love. Nick, welcome to the show, and good to hear from you. What is on your mind?
Affected today, so I was on with PFW earlier, then on with John, and with you. Listen, it's a pleasure to meet you. Just to, because I really want to have a conversation with you. I've never missed a Patriots game since 1960, since they started when Billy Sullivan bought it for $25K. Can you believe it?
Wow.
Well, I mean, the one thing, you know, I just play it straight. I'm enjoying the journey, and, you know, I really want to tell you the story because I know this is recorded, you know, and be brief, but I thank God they picked you. I'm just curious, how did the process go? Put aside that psycho Zoe. By the way, yeah, I got so much going on. I'm very proud of what I'm doing, but I call him Johnny Most. Don't forget that. JM, so that's his nickname. but how, tell me, and for the fans out there, because obviously, you know, Gil and Gino, you know, who I listened to since I was 7 years old, how did the process go for you in just getting this? Because you know you're doing an incredible job. We all love you.
Well, thank you very, very much. I can't express how much that means, Nick. I really appreciate it very much, and I love what I do, and I love the team that I broadcast for, and the fans that I have the privilege of broadcasting too, so I really appreciate it. And, you know, I do have to say that I love my partner as well. Zoe's a great guy on and off the air. And he's an excitable sort, but, you know, he's passionate about the Patriots, passionate about the game, and he really is a great partner. And he's made it easy for me, honestly, at least far less difficult than it should have been for yours truly to come in and have to follow the legacy of Gil and Gino, because as much of a fan that anybody else could be of Gil Santos, I'm that much and more. I really admire the body of his work, and you know, I reached out to Gil in 2008, and this, I guess, helps to explain how I landed this job. I reached out to Gil when I moved to Boston. I was calling Navy football at the time, and I would continue to do so for the next 5 years. But in 2008, I really got hooked on Gil's radio broadcast. I was familiar with his work from afar and loved to listen to him. I used to get the NFL Films CD, DVD sets, Three Games to Glory, and, you know, the various season yearbooks and recaps. In great part because I loved to listen to Gil's highlights and really came to appreciate what the Patriots meant because of my association with Navy and, of course, the influence that the Academy had on Bill Belichick in particular. So 2008, I reached out to Gil, asked him to listen to my work, and Gil was very, very kind in his critique. He gave me the confidence to believe that I could do what I was doing on the college level someday in the National Football League. About a year later, the Sports Hub, the flagship station of the Patriots, 98.5, the Sports Hub, launched. I had an opportunity to meet with the program director and assistant program director at the time. Again, just knocking on the door, hoping to get some part-time work. I was still calling Navy football, college basketball, and professional baseball in the Mid-Atlantic, doing AAA baseball for the Orioles affiliate there. And they didn't have a job for me in Boston, but they held on to my CD. And the CD included highlights and some extended play-by-play of a Navy versus Ohio State game in 2009. And when Gil announced his retirement, I guess it was relatively late in the regular season when they started the search for his successor. And mindful of that CD from 4 years earlier, the assistant program director at 98.5 The Sports Hub floated my name to the executive producer of the Patriots Radio Network, Howie Sylvester. Howie reached out to me, asked to hear another CD. Of course, I sent it as soon as I could. And, you know, one thing led to another. I interviewed for the job. And about the same time, actually, I landed a job with the Pawtucket Red Sox AAA baseball team. So I took the Paw Sox job first, but with the understanding that, if the Patriots call, then, you know, I'll have to leave baseball for football. And I couldn't be happier.
You really did the Pawtucket Red Sox?
I did the Paw Sox for 3 months, actually. I had done a lot of Paw Sox games in the past, but as the voice of the Norfolk Tides. And when Dan Horrid was hired from the Paw Sox by the Cincinnati Bengals, I did some fill-in work for him as well. I was living, you know, as I said, in the Boston area since 2008, so I had developed a relationship with the people in Pawtucket and started the 2013 season of the Paw Sox. And honestly, a week into the first road trip of the year, I was in Allentown, Pennsylvania, getting ready for a game between the Pawtucket Red Sox and the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs. And I got a call from Mike Thomas of 98.5 The Sports Hub, and he said, "I've got good news and bad news. The good news is you're at the top of our list. The bad news is you might have to give up baseball." And it really wasn't such bad news after all. And later on in the month, I was on another road trip with the baseball team in Buffalo, and that's when it became official in late April of 2013 that I was going to be the next broadcaster for the Patriots. But
I mean, it just blows my mind, and me just trying to be succinct and, you know, not – I'm really trying to educate the other callers in Patriots Nation, because I went to high school. Mike, my main mind just went blank. Mike went to, I was born in Worcester, Bob. I live in Miami.
Oh, so you know Mike Tamburo from many years ago.
Oh, my God. He went to North High School with me.
Yeah.
Okay, so to show you, to just tell you the full story why I'm such a maniac with this, and it took honestly, Paul Perillo, Mark, and Andy Hart, back in July to get me on the air. I was debating whether to do it. I'm very famous in the music business. I get one of the biggest YouTube channels, and I suffered through cancer. I'm legally blind, blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's only to help other people. So that's really crazy. So to make a long story short, I've always been the biggest Myra Kraft fan in the world, because my grandfather used to run in the same circles with her dad in the 30s.
Wow.
And she was born in Worcester. I know what it is to go through chemo and radiation. And, of course, she practiced a thing that Mr. Kraft knows very well called mitzvah, because SJ actually asked me, "What the heck does that mean?" I says, "Well, mitzvah is a Yiddish a Hebrew term called giving back. And so I've been doing, I'm coming up with music for her, doing the whole thing. They know I'm a pain in the butt. I'm going to do it. Everybody says I can't, but I'm going to do everything. And I've been actually doing a diary on her site there, you know, thelegacy.com. And it's just a small world. In other words, my family had the Black Ark in Worcester, and Gino used to come in, all the old players like Houston, Antoine, Tommy Heinsohn, Bob Cousy from Holy Cross.
Sure.
So it's a, I mean, that just gives you, you know, the idea where, in other words, I'm so crazy that people say, well, you know what, he's so determined he's going to do it, because I've sent the emails, I want to rename the stadium, MHK, Gillette, I want her to go on the Patriots at Hall of Fame at, you know, the Hall of Patriots place. And I know I'm now getting convoluted, but you get my point, you know, about the Worcester tie. You know, cancer is in every family. You know, we all look at what Dana-Farber does. They're an incredible facility. You know, she, you know, she gave back every day, man. It's like, you know, so you know, this is why this journey is great. And it's so great that we don't have some Mamalouk that's Italian broadcaster that they went through the methodical pace. And I respect program directors like Mike Thomas, you know, to get you to do it. And then, of course, you know, Zoe does his Johnny Most every week. And, you know, I love homers and whatnot. So,
yeah, you know, Nick, I think you really make some great points. And one of the reasons why I enjoy being associated with the Patriots is the fact that this organization makes it such a priority to give back. I mean, the Patriots celebrate volunteerism, and it's not just a slogan. It really is a way of life. I mean, people talk about the Patriot way. I think when I look at it as someone who's somewhat on the inside, but still in many respects on the periphery, I see it in living color. I mean, there are so many players in the locker room who go out and do great things in the community and the organization itself, people in the front office who band together to raise money while running the Boston Marathon, for example, and you know, people who are constantly out and about in the community, and it's former players. I was at an event fairly recently where Pete Brock was the MC and Tim Fox was on stage. It was a fundraiser for a local YMCA program for kids of special needs to be integrated with so-called, quote-unquote, normal or healthier kids, so that they could, you know, build friendships and build bonds through sports. And, you know, so many of these kids live on the margins. And I'm the father of one of those kids with special needs. And I have such respect for the effort that former Patriots like Pete and like Tim make all the time, and current Patriots like Nate Solder, for example, who was honored as their Man of the Year. Because of his commitment to that particular program. But, you know, you think about the importance of an award like the Ron Burton Award in this organization. I think in a lot of other places, it's probably an award that's overlooked, but here it's really, I mean, it's right up there with any other distinction I think a Patriot player can earn. And Devin McCourty, of course, was the latest player to get the Ron Burton Community Service Award. It really is a priority here.
I like I said, and I sincerely appreciate your time, but this is a thing where, you know, this old school people like me, and so I live in Miami now, and I miss Worcester dearly every day. It's just, you know, it's a thing of where this has been going on since Billy Sullivan bought the team. I'll never forget watching in black and white from 1960, and it was, you know, he passed the legacy along, because don't forget, this all starts at the top with Mr. Kraft, and like I said, with Myra, you know, they just brought it through, and this is what just gets me, Bob, crazy. This is why I love the way you broadcast with Zoe, because, you know, outside of, they don't understand us. They go, yeah, they parked the car in Harvard Yard. They don't get us of how we have a passion for life in Boston, whether you're a Republican, Democrat, and the giving back we do, I would put, you know, over any other sports, you know, everybody, the Red Sox, the whole nine yards, over the whole country. I just wish the public nationally would just understand that, you know, through sports, we're able to just do so many things.
Yeah, Nick, you're absolutely right, and I think those who take the time understand it and realize it. And I've got fond ties to Worcester too. I spent many years traveling to Worcester to call games at the Hart Center as the voice of the Navy midshipman basketball team, and later in the Patriot League, I did a lot of college basketball on TV, and really became friends with a lot of people there associated with Holy Cross, and enjoyed. I'll be honest with you, a lot of people who come up from the Mid-Atlantic or around my circles with which I traveled or in which I traveled. You know, Worcester was like it was really the one spot, along with maybe a couple of others in the Patriot League, where you didn't want to go in January or February because of the snowfall, of course. But I always loved it. I loved coming back to New England, though I grew up in Central New York. I've had a longing to be in this area for a long, long time, since I was a kid watching TV 38 Bruins and Red Sox broadcasts and the Movie Loft with Dana Ursay. So, I guess in a lot of ways, maybe it was destiny, but, I also know that I've got to continue to earn the trust and loyalty of people like yourself, because this is such a special organization, and the people of Massachusetts are such special people.
Yeah, and I didn't mean to.
And all of New England,
I'm thinking like Myra or Mr. Kraft would think now, we could create a friggin' a fakakta, to use another Yiddish term, a DVD or a CD on this, and raise funds for the American Cancer Society, because when you said Worcester again, I'm thinking about how many times I waited on Tommy Heinsohn or Rocky Marciano came in, and you won't even believe who my godfather is. Togo Palazzi.
I swear to God, I was about to say Togo Palazzi.
Because my father was, and here's what's crazy, talking about Zoe and Gresh, I met him back in the day, but he ain't going to remember, because I'm a guy who was broke some of the biggest artists of a generation, Afrika Mbata, MC Hammer, all that, and I promote radio, so that's why I respect Mike Thomas. But going to the thing, just a couple points I wanted to make.
Okay.
Thinking about that.
Yeah, you know what, Nick, I hate to cut you off, but you got to make it quick, because we've got our first guest in studio now.
Well, I guess where I started my career at WAAF, and I used to promote WBCN with music. Can you believe it?
I can't believe it. Small world.
Small world. Look at me. God bless you, brother. Look at you. Do an incredible job. And please give my love to Zoe there. I'd love to talk to you guys off the air in the future soon.
Look forward to it, Nick. Give us a call anytime.
Bye-bye.
All right, take care. Nick in Florida, and with us in studio now, as mentioned, our first guest is here, Daron Harmon. And Daron, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Good to have you, and you just got an earful of Nick calling from Florida, a good sense of the passion of Patriot fans, and I guess you guys got to see it and hear it up close in San Diego as well on Sunday night.
Oh, yeah, it was crazy. At one point, we were like, is it a home game? I mean, all the fans behind us, how loud they were when we made plays, man, it was an unbelievable atmosphere.
I mean, how much does that mean on the field, especially in a game like that where you're on the road per se and you're behind early and you had to come back and beat a good team and have that kind of energy from the crowd?
I mean, it just helps with the momentum swing. You know what I'm saying? When you get that type of atmosphere, that type of passion from the fans yelling and screaming, it does nothing but just make you more excited as a player, just to know that you have all those fans behind you and willingness to make a great comeback like that.
And, of course, a comeback that led to the win, meaning a 10th victory for the 12th straight year for this organization. I know you guys are focused in the moment, but do you ever take a step back and think about what you're a part of here in New England and how the past really raises the bar for the guys of the present?
Oh, yes, definitely. I mean, I'm definitely blessed and fortunate to be on this team and be a part of this franchise. I mean, like you said, all you can do is just look back and see all the great things that Coach Belichick has done for this franchise since he's been here. And just me being a part of history is just so exciting that one day I'll be able to tell my son and future grandkids that I was a part of something so special.
We're with Daron Harmon, second-year safety for the Patriots, who just returned like his teammates from San Diego with that win after a week in Southern California. You guys traveled from Green Bay. You've won 8 of 9, but to have that experience of working together, practicing together so far from home, do you become a more unified group? Is there any way to make the bond closer than it already was?
I think that week was just it was amazing. I mean, because when you work in the NFL, it's a lot different in college because you go home. In college, you go home to your brothers, your teammates. That's who you live with. That's who you work out with. That's who you eat with. And that's most likely who you have most of your classes with. In the NFL, you have people that go home to their families. So it might not be as tight, but spending that whole week with everybody, I think it gave us a better chance just to bond, learn more about each other, things you might not have learned or might not have known. And it definitely, I believe, made us a closer-knit group.
Really remarkable to the stage of the season because you guys have been with each other so much since the start of training camp and even before that with the OTAs and the June mini camp as well. It's got to say something about the kind of people you have in the locker room, as much time as you spend with one another, that you're still able to get along and, in fact, build even more chemistry and cohesiveness.
Definitely. I mean, because like you said, we're still around each other a lot because we spend a lot of our time here, but we might be spending more time with defense. So you might not know as much about an offensive player, but when you're just surrounded by each other, living with each other, eating, just like it's college, you're going to learn more about each other and definitely have a tighter feel.
We're joined by Daron Harmon of the Patriots, and in your case, you do have some college teammates who are around. I know you guys get asked this question all the time, or at least questions like it, being from Rutgers with Logan Ryan. You guys were picked 8 slots apart in the same draft from the same secondary in college. Devin, of course, was an early mentor of yours. Tim Wright is now on this team, a guy that used to cut your hair at Rutgers. Is there in some respects a kind of a collegiate atmosphere in that locker room, even though you're playing professional football? And you know it's a business here.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, those guys that I've been hanging with since 2009, so I know those guys really well. Our families know each other. Like, we spent a lot of time together, so it definitely helped me in my, like, last year, early part of last year, like, just trying to get used to things, being a professional athlete with Devin, like, me being so close to him, I could feel comfortable talking to him. Then Logan, not being weird to ask him how he's feeling about the transition because we're so close, and I can just talk to him like that. So it made everything a lot smoother. And then when Steve Beharnes was here last year as well, just made the transition a lot smoother and not as tense.
And, Daron, you and Logan were in an unusual spot as rookies in the NFL. You both had big impacts on the secondary. Logan, of course, with all the interceptions. You with some key interceptions, several starts for the Patriots during the course of your rookie year. Thinking about the Roethlisberger pick, of course, an interception to seal the win over Miami here at Gillette Stadium. And now this year in your second year, you're in a secondary where Darrell Revis and Braden Browner have come in, of course, through free agency. Mm-hmm. And maybe the reps aren't what they might have been, but do you feel like in some ways you're a better player because of the experience around those guys?
Oh, definitely. I'm definitely a lot better player than last year. I was actually watching some film of me from last year, and I was just like, what are you doing? But just being around those guys, bringing that type of knowledge and IQ of football to the secondary, and just having a year of experience, and then still being able to play in certain situations this year, allows my game to evolve, become more mature on the field, be a better football player. Just certain situations have came up to allow me to be a better football player, and I must say I'm totally sure that I'm a better football player than I was last year.
I remember in training camp you talked about learning from other safeties, watching other safeties from around the league, and now you have a chance on this team to work with a guy like Patrick Chung, who came back to the organization. Last year Steve Gregory had a big influence on you. How much has Patrick helped you evolve your game?
Oh, Patrick has helped me a lot, especially with my tackling. He's a guy that I would say I struggled with some points of tackling last year, and this year he pulled me to the side and actually gave me a few pointers of his telling me what to do, and I think it's definitely helped my tackling ability this year.
You're a heavy hitter, and I owe you an apology because the other day at San Diego there was a hit along the sideline and the flag came in, and I thought, oh, a late hit on Daron Harmon, and the referee, Bill Levy, said there was no face mask on the play. Do you like the physical part of the game, and how do you play to the line without crossing the line? Because as we know, it's officiated very closely.
It's a thin line. I do like the style of physical play. It's something that is actually starting to come towards me this year, you know, just watching different safeties, like I said, and seeing how they play. They were very physical, and I realized to be a good safety in this league, you have to be physical. And that thin line, it's just, you just got to know. More times than not with your gut feeling, you know when it's a late hit, unnecessary roughness, or when it's the time to do that. just playing the game for a long time gives you that feeling and that experience to know that.
Because at the same time, is there any way to play this game with the slightest hesitation? You've got to react so quickly, I would think, that there isn't really time to think and process it on the field. It almost has to be instinctive.
Right. It is. It's very instinctive. The moment that you start thinking is the moment you slow down and somebody makes a play on you, or you're a step behind, you're missing the tackle. It's just no time for thinking. You have to play with all the instincts that you have and learn to be a good football player, especially at this level.
And again, we're visiting with Daron Harmon of the Patriots, and this defense has played so well all season long, but especially of late. You hold the Packers to 3 points in the second half. You shut out San Diego in the second half, giving up only one offensive touchdown the whole game. How do you describe the attitude and mentality now of this defense, even as guys like Dante and Chandler and Gerard go down, the way you're able to pick things up and play as a unit?
I mean, it has to start with preparation, and it starts from the top to the bottom. You go from the coaching staff, the way they help prepare us, to the leaders like Vince, Devin, Hightower, all those guys, how they hold everybody accountable to prepare for this game, prepare for it like it's your last game. And that's exactly what we've been doing. We've been doing good film study, practicing hard, really going out there, trying to get in and know our opponents, because the more you know your opponent, the better the game plan is going to work for you. And it's been working well.
Bill told you guys Sunday after the win in San Diego, I'll see you Wednesday. And I asked Tom in his press conference if he took any time off, and he said, no, not this time of the year, that he spent all day Monday and Tuesday preparing for the game. Is that the same for you guys?
It is the same. I mean, you could say it's a day off, but you still see guys coming in, getting their lifts, getting in a cold tub, hot tub. You see them watching film, meeting with coaches. It's just like he said, it's that time of the year where it's no time to take breaks, man. We're in it. It's after Thanksgiving, and this is where football starts.
What's different about Miami when you see the Dolphins after Week 14, as opposed to, of course, playing them in Week 1?
Well, they're definitely a high power offense who have good skill players who are making plays. Landry is coming along now. He's definitely coming a go to guy for them. Then you look at Tannehill. He's passing the ball phenomenal. Percentage rate is way up. I mean, high percentage throws. Lamar Miller's running the ball really well. So they're definitely a good offense, an improved offense that is making a lot of plays.
And the thing about Tannehill, too, he's really come on since that London trip with his pass efficiency, but he still makes a play or two a game with his legs. How does that challenge you guys in the secondary in particular?
We all just have to have always somebody accountable for him, you know, because we know the moment that we, for a second, slip up and not have him either contained, he can easily dip around and make a big play with his legs, a 15 to 20-yard gain that we don't want to have to deal with.
Daron Harmon with us. And Daron, you're a guy who obviously plays football for a living, but in your downtime, I understand that you have an interest in music, that you play the organ.
Yes, I do.
Since your teenage days.
Yeah, I actually play the organ at my church back home, First Pilgrim Baptist Church. Every time I go home, I probably was playing the organ since I was about 13, around that time. Played the piano, played the drums as well. But music is definitely a love of mine as well.
Is that an outlet sometimes, just to get away from football and the pressures of being in the NFL?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, times where stuff is rough, you know. Stuff can build up on you at this profession. You know, you got to spend a lot of time working out away from your families at some time. So sometimes you just need something to just let you sit back and relax for maybe just 15, 20 minutes. So 15 or 20 minutes into my day, I'll just go in a room and just quietly just mess around, play around on the piano until it relieves me so I can go back to the real world.
We talked about your relationship with Patrick. He, of course, comes from a music family. Mm-hmm. Early in the season, I asked him about, you know, who on this team would make, if you had to put together a good group, who would make a good group to tour with, and he mentioned names like Vince and Chandler. Would you fit with that cast as well? Who in your mind, who would you want to go on the road with?
I would definitely go on the road with those guys, man. Those are some entertainers. But then I would definitely have to put Devin McCourty on there. He's a guy that can sing or think he can sing. So I would definitely have to put him out there, definitely to be the lead singer, just so everybody can hear what we hear in the locker room. Then who else would I put on there? I would definitely have to put Zoe Denard. Yeah, he's going on there ASAP because he think he can rap. He's always listening to music, rapping. I don't know if he can really rap, but in the locker room, he's always rapping. So I would definitely add those two to the group.
It sounds silly sometimes, but how important is stuff like that? You guys poking fun at one another or and collaborating and having fun, whether it's rapping on the team plane or singing on the team plane, perhaps, or a bus maybe, or just to you know, pass time after practice or before practice.
I mean, it's really important, man. That just builds the brotherhood, the relationships, makes them tighter and closer, because you can joke with this guy, we can have a good time, and then when you do stuff like that, you start bringing around family, and then they become family. You know, it's all a process that takes place each year.
And if you're playing in your church on a regular basis, I imagine that spirituality is very important in your life as well.
Oh yeah, definitely. I was raised in the church, but I'm not one to sit here and tell you that I'm perfect by any mean. I definitely had my fair share of mistakes as well as any other man. But yes, faith is definitely important. My mother's is a reverend back home, so since I was little, definitely been in the church.
How do you reconcile that with such a violent game that you play?
Well, truthfully, I think God put everything here for a reason. So he put this game here for people to play. So he gave me the talents to play this game. So when I'm out there, I'm just going to play it for him and thank him. Give him a thank you a performance, just to thank him for giving me with this wonderful blessing.
Do you think the game allows you to have a platform, maybe not so much for religion, but just to impact people's lives? And Devin has done such a wonderful job of that as the Ron Burton Community Service Award winner, reaching out and helping other people.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, this platform, people, and sometimes, like, they idolize us, for the better or the worse. But it gives you a chance to use your voice. And I think, like you said, Devin does a great job. I mean, with all his foundation, his charity work that he continually does. I mean, even Chung, with everybody, Vince, just all down the line, those guys, they do a great job of using their platform for the right reason to help the community and give back.
Who were the guys that you admired as a kid growing up in Magnolia, Delaware?
Oh, it was a few. Football players, I would say Ricky Williams was my favorite player. I mean, I love the way he ran the ball. And who else? I love Donovan McNabb. I felt he was the way he carried himself as a quarterback was very professional-like. And then you had to like Tom Brady. You know? I mean, you just see that guy. I remember just being 10 when he won his first Super Bowl and just seeing a guy who came in for an injured quarterback and just took off from there. Led a team, did what he was supposed to do, and just continually got better as time. So all you can do is just love to watch him and just now play with him.
Not that he needs to be reminded of that, but he is so much older than so many of you guys as young teammates. How do you guys bridge the gap there? And is Tom very much one of the guys the way a third or fourth year player might be?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's still a guy, man. We all look at him as just like the bigger brother, like him or Vince, that'll keep us in line at times. And I think that's the relationship that you want between your older players and your younger players. Just that bridge of older brother, little brother. Watch how the older brother does it and try to resemble that.
With Daron Harmon, a few more minutes. I know you've got some work to be done. You're taking your time to visit with us. You're on Twitter, at dharm32.
Correct.
What are the do's and don'ts of being a professional athlete? I mean, when you have the audience that you do on Twitter, I mean, how much education do you guys get on social media?
We go through a good amount. You know, you don't ever want to get your players put in a position that could have been avoided. So they spend a good amount of time on it, and it's all helpful.
Do you find that at least, though, it kind of gives you an unfiltered line of communication to your fans and even other players around the league? Because I noticed a lot of guys will send tweets or message to other players, and one that you recently sent was in support of Eric Berry.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think it just gives you a chance, like you said, an unfiltered message, a way to connect with your fans, people that want to see, like, what you're doing, how you live, what type of person you are. And that's the best way that we can give it to them, by just sending out posts of how we feel, what we did that day, or pictures of what we're doing, where we're at, just to let people know that we're not football players, that we're regular humans too. And then also with the athletes thing, especially like when people are in positions like Eric Berry, you know, you can just show people that for 1 minute I'm not a football player. I'm a fan of him. Mm-hmm. I'm a fan of him. I'm going to be a fan of his story for when he recovers. And then he is able to just preach his story and his testimony to people.
Right. And at the same time, you know, the unfortunate side of it is that sometimes fans have access to you the same way. And being an NFL football player means you're always in the eye of the storm, so mm-hmm. to speak. There's a lot of scrutiny, and especially playing for a team as successful as the Patriots mm-hmm. with such a strong fan following. How do you deal with the scrutiny that you guys are always under?
I mean, these fans love their players. I mean, just living here, we get their support 100%. So we know that at times fans it can be a little hard on us, but at the end of the day, it comes with it. That's the point of being a professional. You got to deal with certain things like that.
Before I let you go, with regards to toughness, too, whether it's from the fans or just the physical toughness you need to be an NFL football player, having been through a program like Rutgers, maybe it's the physical element you guys are practicing in the Northeast as high school players, sometimes in harsh conditions playing in it. Maybe guys are overlooked by a lot of the other glamorous BCS schools. Mm-hmm. You go to a school like Rutgers, you're building something there, as Greg Schiano did. You're competing on a national level, and the defense there was so good for so long. How did that build toughness? What is it about the makeup of your character and those of the players who surrounded you, like Devin, like Logan, that breeds that toughness you need to succeed mentally and mm-hmm. physically?
I think it just comes from Coach Schiano. I think he harped on being mentally tough. But not just for football, just for life. He said we're all going to be placed in certain situations where it's not going to be easy, but what are you going to do different to get you out of that situation? And he put us in a lot of different situations where we had to use mental toughness and physical toughness at the same time. And I think he really instilled that into our brain, and I think it really has helped us when making the transition from college football to NFL football.
He always said, chopping wood, right?
Chopping,
yeah. Keep chopping wood.
Keep chopping, yeah. Just a symbol to just always keep in our mind it's not going to be the first swing that knocks the tree down. You got to eventually keep going. Just, you might not know when it's going to fall. It might fall early. It might fall in the middle. It might fall late. But you got to just keep chopping and just keep going. And eventually it'll fall down.
And good words, I guess, to live by in your position here, where some days the opportunities are plenty, other days they're not, but you got to keep chopping wood to keep producing and keep getting better in the NFL.
That's correct.
Deron, thanks so much for your time.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Thanks. Deron Harmon with us, back with more right after this on Patriots.com Radio.
Hey, what kind of sub is that?
It's a Subway Big Hot Pastrami.
Subway Big Hot Pastrami?
No. Pastrami.
Pastrami!
What? Hey, get back here! Pastrami!
No, pastrami!
Look, it's the Subway Big Hot Pastrami!
Want to split it?
A little late for that.
Get your own Subway Big Hot Pastrami Melt, a monument of flavor loaded with dry rub, pepper-crusted beef, and melty cheese. Enjoy yours with mustard and pickles. Subway, eat fresh.
Limited time only at participating restaurants.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or Tri-Corner Hats. Maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie, 3 Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS. 1-800-MY-SEATS.
before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time. 2% cash back on groceries and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Xbox One is not only a game console, but the home entertainment system every fantasy football fan needs. The NFL on Xbox One is your connection to all things fantasy, giving you personalized news, highlights, stats, and scores instantly on your TV. Watching your favorite team play on Sunday but wondering how your fantasy players are doing? With built-in fantasy football, track your updates on TV in real time across NFL.com fantasy leagues, all while still watching live games. Xbox One, bringing fantasy football to your TV. Now available for $349 at a Microsoft store near you.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go, go. That's it. Come on, kick it into hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call ** NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
Welcome back to the Bob Soucy Show, exclusively on Patriots.com radio.
Tom takes the step, throwing to the near side, catch is made by Vereen, and he's in for a Patriots touchdown!
Have a hot Patriots take? Call Bob on the Ace Ticket hotline at 855-PATS-500 or email him at webradio@patriots.com. Now, here's your host, Bob Soucy.
And we welcome you back to the Bob Soucy Show from our Subway Fresh broadcast studios in Gillette Stadium. We invite you to join us on our Ace Ticket hotline at 855-PATS-500 or 508-298-0398. You can also email at webradio@patriots.com. But first, we go to the line once again on hold for Scott Zolak, my broadcast partner, of course, on the Patriots Radio Network, who made the trip out to Green Bay, came back home, and then traveled west for the San Diego Chargers-Patriots matchup Sunday night, and watched with yours truly as the Patriots came back from that early deficit to beat the Chargers. And Zo, once again, dominant performance by the defense, especially in the second half.
Yeah, they're really starting to come around, Bob, and it's fun to watch the front seven because I think, you know, we talk so much about Darrell Revis, and I'm sure we'll talk about Brandon Browner and his hit and the great safety play and McCourty and this and that. You know, up front, they got some depth now. Silver Salinga gets activated for that game. It helps cut down on Vince Wilfork's reps, which is going to keep him fresh this time of year when you're going to need him. And, you know, their ability just to mix and match some guys, and guys like Casillas and, you know, Akeem Ayers coming off the edge. And, you know, Matt Patricia has finally got the pieces to do what I think he's always wanted to do when he became defensive coordinator.
What do you think makes guys like Ayers and Casillas those pieces for Matt? Is it the versatility they have, their ability to do different things?
Athleticism. And I think that's the biggest thing that you've seen change with this defense, you know, since week one is, you know, it seems like they've gotten more athletic. And obviously when you got Jamie Collins running around out there, it's pretty easy to say, hey, that guy's a heck of an athlete. But, you know, the acquisition of Ayers has been huge. And, you know, coach has been hammered, not necessarily coach, but the organization at times for, you know, picking up guys midseason other than Keith Sleeve, who's really been done anything to this team. Those acquisitions, you know, picking up Ayers, picking up, you know, everybody that they had, Casillas, and, you know, a guy like Jones that they cut as a core special teamer, shows you, I think, the type of depth that, this team has got this time.
You're around this organization so much. What is a guy like Akeem Ayers or Jonathan Casillas and Connor, when they come in here, and in the case of both of those guys, they were on losing teams, not just bad teams, but really bad teams this year. They come to Foxborough. I mean, is it almost as if they get a new lease on their careers? There's a rebirth of sorts, and they all of a sudden are in a situation where the team is successful, but the bar is high, and they have to meet it, and therefore they do?
Well, I think let's look at it for what it's worth and the facts. They got pretty good people around them. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got cover guys like Revis, like Browner, you know, good safety play, and you allow Arrington to do what he does, and you know, just that little pause at the line of scrimmage, say they get a jam, or you take a quarterback off his first read, force him to go to his second, third guy, because the first two aren't available, then all of a sudden the rush becomes complementary after that. It all, you know, complements each other. Good pass rush is complemented by good coverage, and they've been getting great coverage.
And you felt Sunday night the hit by Brad and Browner, which ultimately drew a penalty, helped to really raise
man,
that defense to a different level.
That thing was awesome. And I think Brandon brings an edge that we saw with Brandon Spikes. You know, Spikes did it in the run game, but, you know, he's a liability in coverage. I think Brandon brings a little bit of a physical edge, and let's face it, that's what you need on defense. They're trying to take physicality out of the game for the league, and I really would like it sometime to see, and I thought Dean Blandino really did a good job when he broke down the call. They got the call wrong. It was not helmet to helmet. He even sought out Browner and said that, you know, he did a really good job leading with the shoulder, not the head. And like I said on the broadcast, why was I irate? He did not launch, did not use the crown of the helmet. He didn't intend to knock the guy out where, you know, you see a guy like T.J. Ward intentionally with the helmet go down at the knee of Gronkowski. Or, you know, we saw with Brandon Merriweather here. He just tried to knock guys out with helmet to helmet hit. That's not good for the league, and I don't want to see guys get hurt, but I want to see good, clean, physical football hits, and don't take that away from a guy when he does it.
I think, you know, along with the lines that you do, that the defense definitely responded. Maybe it was the call as much as the hit, but there was certainly a different energy. They were playing very well up to that point, but they definitely responded well. Going back to the Patriots' defenses of the championship years, when Rodney Harrison was back there at safety, I mean, did a guy like that make opposing receivers to think twice about coming across the middle? And does a guy like Browner, even though he's a corner, not a safety, do the same thing? I mean, if you're Mike Wallace from Miami this weekend, what are you thinking watching video?
It's the same thing you're thinking if you're going to play receiver. I hope they don't call my number dragging across or they have a checkout zone where Browner's sitting there waiting for my tell. And I think Mike Wallace has gotten a bad reputation where he's not a physical guy. He's trying to avoid, you know, contact. I thought this year he's kind of taking that on. And he's a gamer, and he's dangerous. But, you know, I think we take Revis, we lock him up. But, hey, if you're a tight end, if you're a back, if you're anybody and you see number 39, you think in the back of your head, boy, I watched film. I know he almost knocked that guy out. I got to protect myself. So that's a good point by you.
All right, with Scott Zolak, broadcast partner, of course, on 98.5 The Sports Hub in Boston, and the rest of our Patriots Radio Network affiliates. We were in South Florida for that season opener. Pats had the 2010 lead, lost 33-20. What's different about New England? What's different about Miami in Week 15?
I think the Patriots are much better, vastly better. They've shored up the offensive line. They've shown you that they could win games doing different things. Defensively, they're obviously a heck of a lot better. To see Gerard Mayo go down and to see the depth that they have at linebacker where Dante Hightower comes in and plays at a Pro Bowl level, all-pro level, and Jamie Collins wears the green dot. You know, I was worried about communication last week. Was there going to be mix-ups and hiccups? The New England Patriots have played a fantastic, you know, schedule these last six games as far as perimeter people, and they've pretty much negated anybody that they wanted to do. You take that Jordy Nelson play away from Darrell Revis, his numbers are phenomenal through their stretch. And I know we keep going to the individual part of it. They say it's a team game, but the guy's worth every penny that you paid that guy. Miami Dolphins, I think they're the same team as they were in week one. You know, they're hot, they're cold, they're up, they're down. Tannehill's okay. I think he manages the game. You know, and now all of a sudden you got the threat of the running quarterback. So, you know, I think they're playing for a lot. Their season's obviously on the line. Maybe Joe Philbin's job's on the line after weathering the Jonathan Martin big weirdo saga. You know, he's handled that well. The team responded. They fell off at the end of the year. It's a big one for him. More importantly, it's a divisional game. And, Bob, you know, as you learn to call these games, everybody likes to check mark, you know, New England when they face, you know, the AFC so-called tomato cans. But you've learned that divisional games are tough. They're grind. It's common opponents. You know them, and you have to do less preparation.
No doubt about it. And the Patriots have an opportunity to win the division on Sunday. Another hat and T-shirt game for the Pats.
Sounds good to me, buddy. Hopefully, I need a rather large hat and a rather large shirt.
What do you want to see from the offense and the line in particular Sunday? Because they still have their work cut out for them against Miami and Cameron Wake and Olivier Vernon and the rest of those guys up front.
I'm fine with everything they do between the 20s. I want to see them dictate tempo inside the five. You know, hand the ball off. I'd like to see them commit a little bit more to the running game like they did at the end of last year. But, you know, Gronkowski's injury kind of forced them into that. You know, that's part of the tease is having that type of target in the red zone. You know, you almost want to throw it every play because Brady always seems to make that great decision. Play a clean game, protect the football and offense, and just push that line of scrimmage. I thought the Jets ran the ball well in Miami, so you may have a chance to do that this week.
Yeah, and the Patriots really got away from the run in the first game, and even Josh McDaniels after that game talked about getting away from the run element in the second half, especially against the Dolphins in week one.
Right, and you know that game became one-dimensional, too. It gets long-sided, and they lay their ears back, and all of a sudden, you can't control tempo and takes away about probably half of your game plan and, you know, the calls you want to make. More importantly, put the pressures on your outside guys, your tackles. And I think we need to make sure that we got those guys help. If you need to put a back there, a tight end, put them there to help in protection if it starts to break down. Keep 12 upright, and we should be okay.
Hey, so lastly, you just spent some time with the coach, Bill Belichick, for a couple of segments for Patriots All Access, which comes up on the CBS affiliate in Boston this Friday and, of course, is on the website patriots.com. There was so much talk last week about the team getting even closer and bonding in San Diego. Do you get the sense that that was the experience and that Bill really was pleased with what transpired with that week in Southern California?
Yeah, he still did talk about that. You know, you'll see it on All Access Friday night. Really pleased with the way the team responded, and he likes just going on the road and shutting it down, and it's football 24/7, even if though we had the nice beach access probably less than a mile from the hotel. And I think he's pleased that, you know, the guys handled that, you know, like mature adults. And sometimes you take young football teams on the road and those temptations outside it end up overtaking the job at hand. But they got through that stretch. I think that's technically the end of the gauntlet. And, you know, they got two divisional games at home that they should be able to play well in. And hey, the Jets will be playing well, too. I mean, they're going to play hard for Rex Ryan. That's the last home game of the year for them. So take care of business, and we should be okay.
It would be fun to get the hats and T-shirts out Sunday. That's the full expectation, I'm sure, for those guys and for you and me, too, to call it on Sunday at Gillette.
It'd be great. It'd be great for the fans. And, again, Bill said it, the amount of fans that went out there that game. It was, I've been doing fans for you now for 2 years. You know, it's been 5 years in the booth. I've never seen anything like it. That was a heck of an effort by the Patriots fan.
Yeah, it was amazing when the Patriots came out and the fans cheered and the Chargers came out and they booed.
They booed them at home. And it's an 8-14. It's not a 4-18. So.
And once again, you were a celebrity out in Southern Cal. Zoe, appreciate it.
All right, Bobby. I'll see you this week, buddy.
All right, sounds good. Scott Zolak, of course, my partner on the Patriots Radio Network. And Sunday we'll have the call, 1 o'clock Gillette Stadium, the Pats and the Miami Dolphins as Week 15 rolls around in the NFL. Last year, remember, Miami denied the Patriots an opportunity to clinch the division in Week 15 in South Florida. But the Pats are coming home having won 8 of 9, including the victory at San Diego Sunday night. Dolphins, meanwhile, as Zoe said, to really an inconsistent team. It's almost as if Miami has been all or nothing this year. The Dolphins have won 7 games. They have lost 6. They have won 6 of those games by double figures, and they have struggled, as noted, to maintain any kind of success. With the last couple of years, last year after that Week 15 win over the Patriots, Miami was in the driver's seat for a playoff berth, but the Dolphins lost the final 2 games of the year to Buffalo and the New York Jets, and therefore San Diego, the Patriots' most recent opponent, got into the playoffs by winning out. The Dolphins, again, a couple of weeks ago, were thinking about a playoff run. Miami still in divisional contention. As of a couple of weeks ago, mathematically, the Dolphins are alive, but a huge setback last week against the Baltimore Ravens. Miami took a lead in that game by a 10-0 score and then scored only 3 points thereafter, and the Dolphins fell to the Ravens 28-13, a week after really an uninspiring but yet still a come-from-behind win on the road against the New York Jets, 16-13. But then you go back a couple of weeks prior to the loss to Baltimore, and the Dolphins had a great opportunity to win a mile high against Denver. Led the Broncos late, Denver comes back to win that game, high-scoring affair, after the Dolphins shut out the Bills, dominate, or at least beaten the Bills soundly, 22-9. Not a shutout, but remember, they did shut out San Diego in the late weeks of November, so they were playing pretty well. They go to Denver, get out to a sizable lead. The Broncos come back and win the game. The Dolphins have to struggle, but still beat the Jets out on the road. They come back home and meet a Ravens team, which just relinquished a big lead in a loss to the San Diego Chargers in Baltimore. And the Ravens had the wherewithal, even without Helati Nota and with a banged-up secondary, to hold down Miami's offense after the Dolphins took that 10-0 lead. Only one touchdown for Miami's offense. It was on a short throw from Tannehill to Brian Hartline. And again, for these Dolphins, there are certainly some positive signs offensively. The evolution and the maturity of Jarvis Landry, the rookie out of LSU, with 63 catches now, averaging about 9 yards per reception. But yet at the same time, no Sean Moreno because of injury. Really what has been a lack of full commitment to the run game, even though Lamar Miller is averaging close to 5 yards per carry at 4.8 per rush. Mike Wallace has had a pretty good season on many levels, but not nearly as good as last year when he had 70-plus catches, and his production has tapered off a bit. In fact, his season high in catches in week one against the Patriots. Charles Clay, the very good tight end, nonetheless has been battling through injuries. He's missed two out of the last three games. Brian Hartline, with only 34 catches this season, thus far 380 yards, coming off back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons. And yet all that said, knowing the abilities of those players and what they have done at times this season, like against San Diego in that home win, Miami is certainly more than capable of coming into Foxborough and really challenging the Patriots this Sunday. The Dolphins have won the last two meetings in South Florida, and keep in mind, a year ago in October, Miami had a pretty sizable lead before the Pats came back to win that game. Now, certainly weather would seem to be a huge factor in favor of the Pats on Sunday. The early forecast calling for a sunny sky and yet cold temperatures, but yet the Dolphins have shown a lot of resolve in less than ideal conditions, far from South Florida like the last two seasons. A year ago, they won a key contest late in the year in the snow in Pittsburgh. As mentioned, they played very competitively against Denver, certainly in an environment much unlike what they experience on a regular basis in South Florida. There's no doubt from this point of view that in game one this year, weather was very much a factor in the second half, when I think the Patriots' defense on the field for a long, long while eventually became fatigued somewhat in the heat and humidity of South Florida, and the Dolphins were able to pull away in that game. But nonetheless, you got to give the Dolphins some credit for their ability, again, to go to Pittsburgh a year ago or to play at Denver very recently and play competitively against the Broncos. But at the same time, as we've noted, the Dolphins have been a very inconsistent bunch during the last couple of seasons. Now, they've also sustained a lot of injuries leading to that inconsistency. Their linebacking core in particular really beat up, and as one looks at the practice report today, there are three Miami linebackers who did not participate. And even going back to the season opener against the Patriots, the Dolphins in that game lost a couple of starting linebackers. Danelle Ellerbe has since gone on injured reserve. Also in the secondary, key safety Louis Delmas, free agent acquisition from Detroit, also on IR. Offensively, Braden Albert, the tackle who had shored up the left side of the line, the blind side for Ryan Tannehill coming into this season, he went down, and so the Dolphins' offensive line has really had a tough time protecting Tannehill of late. Meanwhile, no Sean Moreno is noted, who had such a very productive game against the Patriots in the season opener, also placed on injured reserve. But on the Miami practice report today, among those who did not participate, linebacker Jonathan Freeney because of a hamstring problem, linebacker Jelani Jenkins because of a foot injury, and linebacker Koa Misi due to hamstring and knee problems. Also a limited participant from Miami, Charles Clay, the aforementioned tight end, because of hamstring issues related to a knee problem that surfaced in the preseason and will have to be addressed via surgery in the offseason. Chris McCain is another linebacker with an ankle injury, limited participant today. He had a sack of Tom Brady in the season opener. He's also a guy who's been pretty good for Miami overall this year in special teams, rushing kicks. Dolphins have got a couple of block kicks, including a block punt in the season opener. So McCain is somebody who made the team as an undrafted free agent with his play in preseason and had a good performance against the Patriots, but again bothered by an ankle injury out of that linebacking core. Cortland Finnegan, the veteran cornerback, a well-traveled corner in recent years, limited participant because of an ankle injury. Try to come back for the Dolphins. Same goes for cornerback Jamar Taylor for Miami. Meanwhile, for the Patriots, LeGarrette Blount did not participate today. Not injury related, and if you go on the various news websites or pay attention to the sports news roundup this evening, you'll see stories about Blount and his experience in Pennsylvania, of course, with the run-in with legal issue involving marijuana in the off-season or the preseason anyway, and LeGarrette Blount given an opportunity to pay his debt to society with community service, and that judgment came down in a Pennsylvania court earlier today. Dominic Easley did not participate for the Patriots. The youngster, the rookie out of Florida, still dealing with a knee issue. But for the Dolphins, again, it seems as though injuries have exacted quite a toll on Miami, especially on that linebacking core. But then again, the Patriots have had to play without Jerod Mayo much of this season, and more recently, for the third time this season, had to go without Dante Hightower. Yet the Patriots were able to win over the San Diego Chargers, and of course, they did it, as we've noted, by coming from behind. Pats took a 3-0 lead on a Steven Gostkowski field goal to start the scoring in that affair after the Chargers won the opening, the Patriots won the opening coin toss and deferred to San Diego, of course, fell behind 3-0. The Patriots in that situation had to settle for the field goal. Gostkowski delivered one of his three field goals. He's on the verge, in fact, of becoming the Patriots' all-time leading scorer. Then the Chargers drove downfield and got a touchdown to move in front 7-0. Eventually, scored on a Daryl Stuckey fumble return, scooping up a loose ball that was knocked free from Brad LaFell. He tried to make a spin move after a reception near midfield. Stuckey took it back, and the Chargers have the 14-3 advantage. The Patriots would eventually pull within 14-6 on another Gostkowski field goal. New England made it 14-13 on a touchdown pass from Brady to Gronk. As we've noted already, that Rob Gronkowski, with that touchdown catch, his 10th of the year, became the first tight end in the NFL history to reach 10 touchdowns or more for four seasons. He had been tied with Tony Gonzalez, of course, the now retired great tight end for Kansas City and Atlanta. Gonzalez doing work in television for CBS. And with Antonio Gates on the same field as Gronkowski Sunday night, Gates, the tight end of the San Diego Chargers, sitting at 9 TDs this year on the verge of his fourth double-digit touchdown season as a tight end, but it was Rob Gronkowski who caught his 10th first, and of course set an NFL mark by doing so with the throw from Tom Brady. And the Patriots, with that touchdown, drew within 14-13. That score came at 3:28 of the second quarter. They went to halftime, and that one-point difference, Patriots came out and really struggled early in the third quarter. Eventually in the fourth, they got things going, though. The defense really suffocated San Diego. Phillip Rivers under a lot of pressure. Jamie Collins led the charge for the Pats defensively. Collins with 8 tackles by his lonesome, 1 assisted stop, 9 tackles in all, 2 sacks accounting for 9 yards lost each. The Patriots overall had 4 sacks in the game. Chris Jones and Silver Salinga double teamed on a sack. Rob Ninkovich had another for the Patriots. And New England again applying the pressure on Rivers, and the defense doing a great job. Special teams getting to a blocked punt. Brad and Bolden did that with Mike Cyphers, the punter for the Chargers, a very good punter throughout his 12-year career, going down to injury. The bolt play by Bolden set up the Pats at the 25. Eventually, they got a Gostkowski field goal from 38 yards away to take a 16-14 edge. And then it was Brady to Edelman, 69 yards, right down the middle and right into the gut of San Diego with the dagger in that contest, the 23-14 final. So those are some of the details. Certainly another key statistic in the game, San Diego's third down performance. 4-for-13 on third down for the Chargers after the Green Bay Packers in their 5-point win over the Pats the week before were 10-for-17. Let's go back and listen to the highlights and some of the sound bites from Sunday night's game. And I've got a caller online, Bill Big Al. We'll get to you right after the recap of the Patriots' win over the San Diego Chargers this past Sunday night.
You know, really proud of our football team for what they did today. I thought, we went out there and fought hard for 60 minutes, but I thought our guys really responded, being down, kept fighting back.
Donald Brown in the backfield for Rivers, takes the shotgun snap, extra rusher for the Pats, throw to the right, Floyd got behind the defense, diving, catch back, corner of the end zone, touchdown San Diego! Tom takes the shotgun snap, a twist by San Diego up front, a throw to the near side, catch made by LaFell, Brandon goes down, the ball comes loose, it's picked up by San Diego, running across the 35 to the 30, in the clear to the 10, to the 5 on a fumble return for a touchdown for the Chargers, a score for Daryl Stuckey.
I thought we hung in there and battled, and obviously a big play by Bolden on the block punt.
Now the veteran Cyphers in his 12th year for San Diego with his second punt of the night stands on the near hash mark, left hash mark of the 13-yard line. Has the snap. Punt the ball, and it's blocked. In on the block punt was Brandon Bolden. Bolden came in from the left side of the Patriots formation, and he got to Cyphers and blocked the punt, and the punter is down for San Diego, and the Patriots are going to have possession deep in Charger territory. Ron flexed out to the left. It trips punt formation right. Edelman in short motion from the near side right. Shotgun snap to Brady. He throws for Gronkowski. Back shoulder. Touchdown, Patriots!
Terminator! Take advantage of the other team's mistakes as Gronkowski spikes it.
Defensively, you know, can't say enough about that effort. And, you know, without Hightower, you know, just everybody stepping up, Casillas and Collins. And, you know, I thought our defensive line front did a good job. Big interception by Akeem.
Rivers back in the pocket, throws down the middle, intercepted by Akeem Ayers. Good break on the ball and an interception at the 30. He was able to dart in front of Keenan Allen. Rivers in the gun. Patriots crowd the line. Ayers and Collins hover over the center. Here they come. Rivers under pressure. Down he goes. Rob Ninkovich came from the quarterback's right. And another New England sack back to the 10.
We knew it was going to take 60 minutes. This team had been in more close games than any team in the league. And they fought hard. It's a physical game. It was great to come out with the win. So it's always tough winning on the road, especially against a team that's 8-4. So it was a big win.
Third down and two. Brady from the gun has Edelman split to the left. Brady drops back. Look left. Now he looks right. Tom's going to tuck it and run. He gallops across the first down marker and slides at the 25.
There you
Tom
go.
Brady for the second time tonight. Abandoning the pocket on a first down carry. Snap by Aiken to Allen. Swing of the right leg. The kick is driven to the uprights. And the kick is good. And the Patriots have the lead with 10:34 to go.
Great play. It was, you know, it was a good opportunity for us to throw it. They were, you know, pretty heavy on the run, and you know, we found a little spot to throw it, and Jules made a great catch and run. So we needed that type of play at that point in the game, and you know, defense took over from there.
Play fake to Blunt. Tom fires down the middle for Edelman. Leaps to make the grab. Comes down with a stiff arm. Runs away from a defender. In the clear to the 35-30. Julian to the 20. Edelman to the 10. Edelman to the end zone. Touchdown, Patriots.
Playmaker, make a play. Woo!
Phillip Rivers takes the snap. Collins on a blitz. Chasing Rivers. He's going to get him for the second time tonight. It's a sack at the 7.
You know, everybody needed to contribute, and everybody did. And I'm real happy.
A wonderful effort all night long by the defense and the special teams, and the offense comes through in the clutch. Patriots win it over San Diego to improve to 10-3.
And our thanks to producer Kevin Collins. Job well done once again with a montage of highlights and sound bites, principally from Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. After the Patriots win over the San Diego Chargers Sunday night, New England again having won 8 of 9, now 10-3 overall this season, coming home to face Miami Sunday at 1. Meanwhile, Big Al's been very patient. He's been on hold for some time, and in fact, with his second call today from Valdosta, Georgia, he's on our Ace Ticket hotline at 855-PATS-500. Big Al, how are you today?
Hey, Bob Stoci, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for your patience.
Oh, no, no problem at all. Listen, great win, just a great win. We really had to have that one. And I want to, since you went through the recap there, I want to call attention to something. You and Zolak made a really sharp call on something that, frankly, you made me think, you kind of corrected my thinking. I was, when we got it back to 14-12, you know, as a fan, because I'm on the fan contract. I'm not on the former ball player contract or the coach quarter contract or the broadcaster contract. I'm on the fan contract, and on the fan contract it says this would be a great spot to go for two. You know, let's get it to 14 each. You know, come on, let's catch up to them. You know, that type of thing. And Zolak, I mean, you and he were right on top of that. I like, it's too early to chase points. You get a field goal later, then followed by a touchdown. You're up 9, and that makes it a two-score game, and, you know, dadgummit, as they say. That is exactly what happened. Just incredible. So I don't know if you like the amazing Kreskin or what, you know, what you got going on, but that, I mean, that was exactly how the game worked out, and you called that second quarter.
Well, you know, Al, you know the saying about a blind squirrel, every now and then a blind broadcaster finds a nut, too.
You find a nut in the mud, don't you?
Yeah, you know, honestly, I've always believed that. I think a lot of teams, you see it sometimes at the college level where coaches start chasing points too early. Less right. So at the NFL level, I think, but teams get themselves in trouble that early in the game, especially with possession looming to start the third quarter. I mean, the thinking after watching the Patriots in my time calling the games, and brief as it's been, they so often have doubled up those scores. They strike at the end of the first half, and they come right back out at the start of the second half, and they double up those scores. And I think that when you start looking at the team and where they were relative to, you know, the way the defense was playing, although the offense was struggling a bit, to draw within one with the defense holding down San Diego, I mean, there was never really a sense at that point in time that the Chargers were going to get going offensively. I mean, the Patriots were just getting too much consistent pressure on Rivers, and the job that Revis was doing on Keenan Allen. So I think it made perfect sense at that point. It really wasn't, you know, from my point of view, I think, you know, any marvelous piece of strategy on my point. I think Zoe was really the guy who was more on top of it because he could explain the rationale behind it. You don't want to leave a point on the field and then find yourself late in the game, you know, even needing a touchdown rather than a field goal if you're trailing by four instead of trailing by three. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Now, you go back to our Super Bowl, for example, in 2003 against the Carolina Panthers.
Mm-hmm.
You could easily make the argument that John Fox and the Panthers lost that game because they were chasing points. If you break that game down, both teams scored four touchdowns. Both teams kicked one field goal. But instead of the game ending up in a 31-31 tie and maybe going into overtime for the first time in Super Bowl history, the Pats ended up winning by three because the Pats made 1 2-point conversion in the second half when they really weren't. It wasn't a chase point situation.
Right.
And the Panthers missed 2 2-point conversions in the first half and early third quarter when they were chasing points.
Mm-hmm.
So they really, that 3-point differential was caused by either making or missing 2-point conversions. And if they had just played it straight, you know, maybe the game ends up tied and goes in overtime. You know, who knows? The only reason why the Pats went for two the time that they did and made it was because really they had no choice. They were sort of forced into it by the Panthers missing a couple of 2-point conversions. You know, it just made so much sense at the time. They pretty much had to do it. They weren't chasing points. They were, you know, putting themselves in position. And the Panthers have been chasing the points. So you go back and break that down. You can cost yourself, like you say, if you don't play this right. Now, a lot of the coaches, I guess, have these charts.
They do, yes.
When to do it or not. And, you know, it kind of cracks me up. Maybe this is one of these old school, you know, they don't do it like they used to, you know, type of comments. So forgive me. But can you imagine Vince Lombardi looking at his chart? I mean, give me a break. You know, come on.
Well, you know, I think it was Dick.
I don't know, Bart Starr. Gee, I'm not sure, Bart, what we ought to do here. Maybe we could take a vote or something because I don't have my chart. You know, give me a break. Come on. I don't know why. Maybe these guys are so cramped for time these days that they just have to have these crib notes.
Well, I think they're so well prepared, and I think Dick Vermeil might have been the first coach who came up with a 2-point chart, when to go for it, when not to, when he was an assistant coach before he became an NFL head coach, and it might have even been at the college ranks. I seem to recall reading that somewhere, maybe a New York Times piece within the last couple of years, and I think coaches now are so well prepared, and they want to be prepped for every situation, and that's one thing about the Patriots, too, and Bill Belichick. There always seems to be a contingency plan, and they never seem to be surprised. And they may very well be surprised sometimes, but they never seem to be surprised by anything that sprouts up during the course of a game. So I think even when it comes down to managing point differentials and when to go for two and when not to, you know, again, it's something they want a track record. It's based on, you know, what history tells you to do. There's a mathematical reasoning behind it, and the fewer possessions you're going to be left with in the course of a game, well, then the greater sense of urgency. But when you're talking about late in the second quarter, at that point in time, it is too early. And, you know, there's also the mental aspect, and I think sometimes, you know, coaches have to weigh that into consideration as well. When a team scores a touchdown, 2-point play is a relatively low percentage play. You score a touchdown, and, you know, you find a lot of teams that go for the 2-point conversion too early, and they come away empty-handed with it. And then suddenly there's this deflation. And I think,
it's almost like you didn't score the touchdown.
Right.
It almost takes the frosting, you know, off the cake or whatever. You don't say, damn, you know, that's the crowd. If it's a home game, the crowd sort of they don't boo necessarily, but they kind of on their hands, or they don't know how to react.
I think it's also a sign that, you know, it's a sign of confidence, a sign that we're in control of this game now. you know, without resorting to it too early. And again, I think what we were talking about in the second quarter on Sunday night, you know, in my mind, it really wasn't, as I said earlier, you know, any marvelous piece of strategy on my part. It just seemed to make, you know, sound sense at that point. This was the right way to go, and
well,
don't start chasing points.
Well,
I really appreciate that, Big. I appreciate it very much.
You know, maybe I'm just easy to impress. I don't know. But look, last question.
You got it.
You mentioned, well, I called a couple of weeks ago. We were looking at this game on Sunday night, and you're saying, you know, this could be something of a tough travel because a Sunday night game on the West Coast for an East Coast team is almost, I guess it's almost like playing a Monday night game in Buffalo or something. You kind of lose some time in there. How do we do as far as getting back to the East Coast, getting sleep, having almost a normal Monday or not a normal Monday? How did that go early in the week with the travel with the team?
Well, the team got in early Monday morning, as you'd expect. Got back to Gillette Stadium right around 8 a.m. on the bus from Foxborough. Now, let me say this, that hopefully the team got a little more sleep, and I'm guessing they did, than some of us who have toddlers who we came home to who were under the weather. So, you know, I'm still trying to catch up, but that doesn't really make any, that doesn't mean anything, right? It's just with those 53 guys in the locker room, they were going to have to be ready to go on Sunday. And it seems to me that, you know, I can appreciate that, Big Al. I understand.
I don't care about your health, Bob. I want you to be healthy all the time.
No, but I think, you know, the sense we get is that, you know, they're ready to go. I mean, Bill told them after the game Sunday in San Diego, I'll see you Wednesday, but you might have heard with Daron Harmon a short time ago, not many guys took the last 2 days off. They were at work. They were getting their weightlifting done. I think it's interesting to me, and maybe it shouldn't be surprising, but, you know, Julian Edelman in the preseason made a comment that being a professional athlete is more than a job, it's a lifestyle. And it's really interesting to me on this particular team to see the number of guys who really live that philosophy, like Tom Brady in particular, who talks so often on interviews about getting the right sleep and you know, making sure that you know, he takes care of his nutritional needs and eats the healthiest way possible. And you know, and I think that you have so many guys now, because it is truly a 24/7, 365-day endeavor. I mean, these aren't guys who are working other jobs in the off season. They come into training camp in shape. They continue to work out during the course of the season. It's a grind. It's a grueling game. It's so demanding physically and mentally that they really have to be well rested. And it's one of the things you hear from a lot of the Patriot veterans repeatedly, that, you know, you got to take care of your body. And I think the young players on this team hear that preaching as well. And you know, the vast, vast majority, if not almost all of them, certainly take heed. And these are guys that, you know, I think, considering the travel and coming back to play the Dolphins, will be ready to go. And certainly the week one loss, there's got to be some lingering effect there as well. And that's a loss that's got to sting for them too. So, Al, I'm sorry you dropped off. Looked like we just lost you. But I do appreciate the call. Thanks so much, as always. And we hope you'll dial us up as well at 1-855-PATS-500 or email at webradiopatriots.com. And again, we're coming to you from the Subway Fresh broadcast studios here at Gillette Stadium. In a short while, we'll be joined by the voice of the Miami Dolphins and the former Dolphin wide receiver Jimmy Cefalo. We'll also come back and hear from Bill Belichick about the Dolphins' pass rush. I think more concerning than the jet lag and the ill effects of the cross-country travel for the Patriots now is trying to slow down Cameron Wake and Olivier Vernon and the rest of those Dolphins on the front line, of course, who apply so much pressure with regularity and have done so against the Patriots in the past. So we'll continue with more of the show. Again, Jimmy Cefalo, voice of the Dolphins, still to come. We'll hear from Bill Belichick, his thoughts today about the Dolphins' pass rush, and we'll also take a look back and listen as well to the first game between these teams way back in Week 1 as we continue on the Bob Soucy Show here on Patriots.com Radio.
Hey, what kind of sub is that?
It's the Subway Big Hot Pastrami.
Subway Big Hot Pastrami?
No. Pastrami.
Pastrami!
What? Hey, get back here! Pastrami!
No, pastrami!
Look, it's the Subway Big Hot Pastrami!
Wanna split it?
A little late for that.
Get your own Subway Big Hot Pastrami Melt, a monument to flavor loaded with dry rub, pepper-crusted beef, and melty cheese. Enjoy yours with mustard and pickles. Subway, eat fresh.
Limited time only at participating restaurants.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or Tri-Corner Hats. maple syrup, or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie, 3 Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time, 2% cash back on groceries, and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Xbox One is not only a game console, but the home entertainment system every fantasy football fan needs. The NFL on Xbox One is your connection to all things fantasy, giving you personalized news, highlights, stats, and scores instantly on your TV. Watching your favorite team play on Sunday but wondering how your fantasy players are doing? With built-in fantasy football, track your updates on TV in real time across NFL.com fantasy leagues, all while still watching live games. Xbox One, bringing fantasy football to your TV. Now available for $349 at a Microsoft store near you.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go, go. That's it. Come on, kick it into hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call *NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
Pumped up for this week's game?
Beast Mode! Protein bars for everybody!
Well, we are too!
Energy!
Call the Bob Soucy Show on the Ace Ticket Hotline at 855-PATS-500 or email the show at webradio@patriots.com. Now, here's your host, Bob Soucy.
And we welcome you back to the Bob Soucy Show on our final half hour or so, we're going to visit with Jimmy Cephalo, the voice of the Dolphins, of course, a former longtime Miami wide receiver. He will call the game with Bob Greasy and Joe Rose Sunday from Gillette Stadium on the Dolphins Radio Network. I will be joined by Scott Zolak, of course, on the Patriots Radio Network on the flagship in Boston, 98.5, the Sports Hub, plus the rest of our affiliates throughout New England. And, Zoe, we no longer have to ask that question when number 29 is out there for the Patriots, LeGarrette Blount. Of course, he didn't play in week one for the Pats against the Dolphins. He was a Pittsburgh Steeler at the time. And while Miami was entertaining the Patriots, the Dolphins got a blocked punt early, scored on a Lamar Miller 4-yard touchdown catch on a pass from Ryan Tannehill. But the Pats came right back, and it was Shane Vereen who scored the first TD of the season for the Patriots. Eventually, New England had a 20-10 lead at halftime, but the Dolphins came back to prevail in that game by a 33-20 score. Kevin Collins, our outstanding producer, again, has been hard at work. Let's go back and have a listen at some of the highlights from week one of 2014.
Ryan Allen, the second-year punter for the Patriots, the left-footer set to boot it away. Jarvis Landry, the rookie from LSU, waiting on the return, near side of the 25. Low snap, and the punt is blocked. It's picked up by the Dolphins inside the 15, scrambling to the football. Miami has it on a punt block. On a first and goal to go snap, play fake by Tannehill, rolling right, throws it in the flat, catches May, a dive to the end zone, and a touchdown for Lamar Miller and Miami. Green marked down at the 2. It's a second and goal to go. Shane, the lone setback, takes the handoff, runs it up the middle with a dive for a Patriots touchdown.
Great answer. Perfect drive.
Shotgun snap to Tannehill, play fake inside, stands in the pocket. Now he's under rush. He floats one down the middle of the field. It's picked off by Alfonso Dennard at the 6. Amendola starts in motion left to right. He joins Edelman there. Brady drops back. He's looking left. He rolls right. He looks across the middle. He throws to Gronkowski. He has a touchdown for the Patriots.
Who's back? The big boy. My gosh, you talk about a catch radius.
45-yard field goal try from Gostowski, who converted from 47, going the other way. This kick left to right from the wide hash mark to near hash. Snap in the spot from Aiken to Allen. Kick airborne to the uprights. And the kick is good. So with 6 seconds to go in the second quarter, the Patriots add to their lead. It's now a 20-10 advantage. The who man in the lineup is the tight end right. Brady with a play fake. Under a rush from Cameron Wake, and the ball comes loose as Brady goes down. Miami swarming over the quarterback, and the Dolphins come away with a sack and a fumble. A turnover at the Patriot 34. Moreno to the quarterback's right. Tannehill off the step. Hands it off to Moreno. Hit in the backfield. Breaks the tackle. Runs up the middle. Lunging to the goal line. He's in for a touchdown. Brady from the gun. Get a four-man rush for the Dolphins. Tom hit as he releases. Ball comes loose. And another sack by Wake. The Dolphins can start celebrating. They recover a fumble inside the 15.
Patriots can't block anybody today.
Ryan Tannehill and the Dolphins today proved the tougher of the two AFC East rivals in the end. Miami wins it again by outscoring the Patriots in the second half, 23-0.
And again, our thanks to Kevin Collins with a recap of the Patriots-Dolphins, the highlights from week one, mostly lowlights in the second half from a New England point of view. The Dolphins, of course, would beat the Patriots in the season opener and then lose the next two games, falling to Buffalo in week two, 29-10, before a loss at Kansas City, or rather at home against Kansas City, 34-15. Patriots, meanwhile, would come back and win the following week against Minnesota, win the week after that against Oakland, and then fall in a hard way to Kansas City. But since week five, the Patriots, a much different team, having won 8 of 9. They've just finished the so-called gauntlet of teams out of their division with great quarterbacks, or at least with quarterbacks who have outstanding reputations and, statistically speaking, great bodies of work, if not both. The Patriots, of course, in most recent weeks have taken on Aaron Rodgers and the Packers and played in a very tight game, and the lone loss for the Pats since week four on the road at Lambeau Field. The defense holding the Packers to only a field goal in the second half before the defense comes back and takes on Phillip Rivers and his cadre of receivers and really does a great job shutting out the Chargers much of the way, including the entire second half, en route to the 23-14 win this past Sunday. We've documented the Dolphins' inconsistencies. Miami during the middle of the season did win 3 in a row over Chicago and Jacksonville on the road before shutting out San Diego 37-0. But then Miami was beaten by a late Detroit comeback at Ford Field in Detroit 2016, won over the Bills 22-9, lost at Denver, relinquishing a late lead 39-36, beat the Jets coming back in that game 16-13, and then were soundly beaten by Baltimore despite taking a 10-0 lead over the Ravens and falling by a 28-13 final in South Florida last week. So the Dolphins come in at 7-6, and for the Patriots, as we've documented, an opportunity for an AFC East clinching win. The Pats can beat the Dolphins and secure a 6th straight division championship. And the Pats dominating the AFC East through the years, and their final 3 games of the regular season will all be intra-division contests, starting, of course, Sunday at 1 with Miami, going to New York to play the Jets, coming back home to take on the Buffalo Bills. The Patriots, 65-18 overall against the AFC East since 2001, a .783 winning percentage, and they have won 16 straight at home against the AFC East. And what a difference, of course, in so many different ways since week one for New England. Certainly this team much better in every facet. You talk about the offense, the line shoring up protection, Tom Brady responding, of course, and putting himself in the conversation once again for MVP, Rob Gronkowski, who had come back, of course, off the knee injury to play in week one against the Dolphins, had the touchdown grab, but certainly at that point early in the campaign, far from the full Gronk that we have seen in recent weeks. Meanwhile, the New England defense taking shape. There was no Brandon Browner on the field in South Florida on that particular Sunday in early September. Browner, of course, along with Darrell Revis, giving the Patriots the complementary corners, one to bring physicality and energy, and the other, of course, simply to very quietly and smoothly take out the opposing team's best receiver, as Darrell Revis did against Keenan Allen of the San Diego Chargers, limiting him to 2 catches and 3 yards on Sunday night. So the Pats certainly much different on offense. We know they're much different on defense and even special teams. Going back to the first punt of the season, it was blocked. Dolphins set up for a touchdown. But more recently, Ryan Allen became the 3rd Patriot named AFC Special Teams Player of the Week. That honor, of course, bestowed on Ryan after his performance on Sunday night against San Diego, net punt average of 44 yards and field position in a tight, low-scoring game. So instrumental in the outcome. Eventually, the Pats get the block punt by Bolden against Mike Seifers, and deep in San Diego territory, capitalize. Allen helped keep the field tilted against the Chargers with his outstanding punt work. And you can't overlook as well the performance of the guys chasing down those punts. Like even Brian Timms, the young wide receiver, did a good job for the Patriots to complement the work of Matthew Slater, Nate Ebner, and the usual suspects on the Patriots special team. So all around for the Pats on Sunday, though the offense may not have been at its best, from a special teams and defensive standpoint, a very, very impressive performance. And the Patriots are going to need all of that and more Sunday against the Miami Dolphins. Certainly the Pats recognize it will not be easy. We've noted the Dolphins came into Foxborough in October of 2013. Had a lead in that game. It was actually a strip sack by Logan Ryan of Ryan Tannehill that helped turn the fortunes around in that contest. A Gostkowski field goal really got the Patriots going. It was a long field goal with the wind at its back relatively late in the 3rd quarter of that contest. The Patriots, of course, were able to pull away eventually and beat the Dolphins here a year ago, but fell in Miami in week 15, and as we know, began this season with a misstep in South Florida as well, falling to the Dolphins by the 33-20 score. Ryan Tannehill for Miami played pretty well in the season opener this year, then struggled the next couple of weeks. It was during the week of preparation when the Dolphins were about to travel to London for the 4th game of the season when Joe Philbin did not necessarily give his quarterback Ryan Tannehill the full vote of confidence. And Tannehill certainly was subject to a lot of scrutiny, a lot of questions during the week of preparation for a matchup with the Oakland Raiders in Week 4, but he has come back and played very, very well since overall with his numbers. But again, the Dolphins, as a team, very inconsistent. We've touched on some of the injuries. We're going to talk about those momentarily with Jimmy Cefalo, who is the voice of the Dolphins, does the play-by-play after a long career as an NFL wide receiver out of Penn State. Again, a guy that took his on-field skills and transferred them into the broadcast booth, not necessarily as a play-by-play guy at first, but he did work for NBC for years, was in fact a color commentator, and did some news reporting and as well as some hosting. He was a member of the Today Show cast and really an all-around talented guy in the broadcasting world, and then moved into the play-by-play booth for the Dolphins to work on the radio network there with Bob Greasy and Joe Rose. It's an all-Miami Dolphin alumni broadcast, and they do a great job. And, of course, they're coming back to Gillette Stadium. I remember last year at halftime of the game here in Foxborough, and again, being my first matchup of Patriots and Dolphins. The Dolphins were playing well at halftime and had the lead, and ventured out to the line, the long line at halftime, leading to one of the men's rooms in the broadcast booth area, and Joe Rose was there, and I made a remark along the lines of, "Wow, the Dolphins are really playing well. You guys are off to a great start." And he said, "Hey, we've been here too many times. We know how it goes in New England." And sure enough, what he was alluding to unfolded in the second half as the Patriots came back to beat the Dolphins. Certainly you'd have to think the Dolphins will come north. Their season's on the line, as Scott Zolak mentioned a bit earlier, too. They may be very well playing for their coach's career, Joe Philbin, and try to save his job as owner Stephen Ross will have a decision to make if the Dolphins fail to reach the playoffs this coming January. But Miami comes north, one would think, based on the Week 1 result over the Patriots, and as well, just the familiarity that goes with being a division foe, with a great deal of confidence. And Jimmy Cephalo, of course, as noted, will call the game with Bob Greasy and Joe Rose. And Jimmy was kind enough to join us before the Week 1 encounter of these teams and now stands by in South Florida to visit for a few minutes as well. Jimmy, thanks again for your time. And it's been such an interesting year in the NFL overall, hard to predict from one week to the next. And I guess the Dolphins have been the true embodiment of that. How do you try to begin to explain the inconsistency of this Miami team?
Well, that's the tough part about it, and that really a good team is more consistent. This has been an improved football team, but they lost three games in the final minute this year against pretty good opponents, including the Green Bay Packers, the Detroit Lions, and the Denver Broncos. That makes the difference. But as Joe Paterno used to tell me in my days at Penn State, there's only five or six really important plays in a football game. Problem is, you never know where they're going to come. And the Dolphins have missed out on just too many of those. And then last week against the Ravens, when they really needed a win, the win to keep them at the top of that that group of teams that are fighting for the wild card spots, they lay an egg in the last three quarters. They were up 10-0 in the beginning of the second quarter, and they just played really poorly and were outscored, I think it's 28-3 the rest of the way. So where is the issue? Where is the killer instinct? Where is the ability to win in the fourth quarter or the ability to win in December? And those are the questions that have got to be answered. If the Dolphins are going to get to the playoffs this year, they have to win out. There are three games against beginning Sunday against the Patriots where it's the toughest of battles for them, and then they come back home to the Vikings and Jets. But that inconsistency is what has dogged them for the last 4 or 5 years. And if they're going to be a good football team, they got to find a way to win in December and be more consistent throughout.
Every team deals with injuries. The Patriots certainly have had their share on defense in particular, but the Dolphins have had several key injuries, in particular on offense at left tackle with Brandon Albert. How much of a factor has that been, seeing the kind of pressure that's been on Ryan Tannehill, especially in key situations, third down, opposing teams consistently getting pressure on him, unlike they were doing early in this season, but like they were doing the last couple of years?
Yeah, the issue has been with Brandon Albert's injury at the left tackle spot. They've moved the rookie, Juwan James, who's played really well at right tackle, over to the left side, and he's held his own at the left tackle spot. But they've taken Dallas Thomas into the right tackle position, and he's not held his own. He gave up 3.5 sacks last week. If Elvis Dumervil and he were playing tag, Elvis Dumervil would still not be it. He never touched him. So it was a very difficult day, and that's really where the pressures come from. The Dolphins have got a better roster than they've had in years. They've done a very good job of personnel this year. But injuries has depleted that front line in so many ways. Do you know what? The good teams don't do that. The good teams don't complain about it. The Dolphins haven't complained publicly about it, but the good teams also find a way to win, like the Patriots. When you look at what happened in that week one, the Dolphins did a really good job of pressuring Tom Brady, and they had made those changes with the trade at the beginning in the preseason. It was just get back to work, find a way to win it, plug the hole, next man up, all the things they say, and they win. The Dolphins have not found a way to turn that corner just yet.
Yet the Dolphins have beaten the Patriots the last two meetings, granted in South Florida, and I would think the Dolphins went away from Foxborough last year thinking they let one get away. They were in control of that game. So despite the inconsistencies and the problems the Dolphins have faced to date, is it a confident team that comes north to New England thinking they're very much in contention still for a playoff spot and very much on par with the Pats?
Well, I don't think they believe they're on par with the Pats at this stage. I mean, they beat them, the last two times, including the opener this year when the Dolphins came back after halftime to play really well. But, I guess I have to describe it probably as a desperate team. When you know your season's on the line with a loss and you're out, there are three left, and you go against a team that's controlled the division for the last decade, it's tough to be confident. But that can be a dangerous team, too. The teams you got to worry about. When we played the Jets the week before, you never know what they were going to do. They were going to take a lot of gambles. Maybe there was going to be an onside kick, but they come out with some strange and unusual blitzes where they go for it on fourth and short each time and every time they're on the field. Those are dangerous football teams, especially when they've got a pretty good core of players. I think that's probably the football team you're going to see with the Dolphins this Sunday.
Do you think these final 3 weeks they're playing for Joe Philbin's job?
I think in some ways, yes. It was widely believed that unless they had broken out of that 8-8, 9-7, 7-9, position, that it would be difficult, or at least that would come into question whether or not Joe Philbin would be here. He's a good football coach. He's an even better person, and I think we're all pulling for him. But if you go 3 years, and Stephen Ross, the owner of the Dolphins, has been very generous, and he's given basically a blank check to the personnel people saying, here, under your salary cap rules, go do what you need. Here's a check. And he's put a lot of money into it and a lot of effort, and he's grew up as a Dolphin fan here on Miami Beach. And at a certain point, I think you've got to say, well, we have not broken out of that mediocre positioning in the National Football League, and so it's time to make a change. And I'm not sure, and I would imagine that the conversation will be a very strong one if they do not win these last three games and get to that 10-win mark.
Jimmy Cephalo, voice of the Dolphins, a former Dolphins receiver, our guest. Jimmy, Ryan Tannehill wasn't sure he was going to be the starter, I guess, when the week began as the Dolphins were preparing to go to London to take on the Oakland Raiders. Joe Philbin stuck with him, and since then, he's been a much better quarterback than the first 3 weeks of the season. How much progress have you seen from Tannehill?
Quite a bit, I think. I mean, he's made quicker decisions. The ball comes out of his hand faster. He has completed six games in a row now, at least 69.7% of his passes. He'd been five in a row over 70% last week. He just missed that mark. Because he knows where he wants to go with the football. He's quick in decisions. He's a very smart guy. He always has been. He looks downfield, checks his progression, and knows exactly where his check down guy is. And that's really what's gotten him to that 70% mark. But he's not throwing the ball down the field really well. We're talking 20-plus yards. He's got 20 red zone touchdown passes, but as far as throwing the ball deep to Mike Wallace, which is Mike's forte, he's not been able to do that. He's not been accurate in a deep throw. If there's a criticism, it's that. But last week they ran, believe it or not, Bob, they ran a quarterback sweep with him. He was an athletic guy at Texas A&M. He was a wide receiver, a starter there for a couple of years, too, before he turned to be a quarterback. So he's athletic. He runs the ball very well. He can scramble. They roll him out. They move the pocket. And he's made great progress. He's more than a serviceable quarterback. I think he's a quarterback that can be in the top 10 of the NFL when it's all said and done.
How much has he been hurt by the injury problems Charles Clay's had to battle through? I mean, a guy like that has been so consistent. The Patriots have so much respect for him. And certainly Brian Hartline hasn't had the role that he's enjoyed the last couple of years.
Well, that's been a large part of it. But, when you look at what they've done, Jarvis Landry, the second-round pick out of LSU, has just been terrific. He's got more than 60 catches. Very tough. Runs the patterns in space, in the slot, as a slot receiver, and he's very good and very tough. A lot of his catches are third-down catches in traffic. Very strong hands. An emotional leader. And so he's taken some of those positions that you would normally expect from a tight end. With the injury to Clay, Deion Sims, a former, I think he was a fourth-round pick out of Michigan State, has played well. He's a big, strong tight end, a good blocker. But Clay was the guy who really was kind of a hybrid, half wide receiver, half tight end, and coming along until he injured a knee and then a hamstring before the season began. So he has been slow and it's been difficult, but Landry's taken some of those positions. They've gone to a three or four wide receiver set as opposed to having Clay move out into the slot. That's hurt him a little bit, but I have to think when I look across the board that Jarvis Landry has replaced a lot of those catches.
Jimmy Cephalo with us. in week one, the Dolphins linebacking core got hit with a couple of injuries in game and went in fact, a bit shorthanded. And since, the Dolphins have had even more injury problems in the linebacking core. How difficult is it going to be for the Dolphin defense to support that rush of Cameron Wake and Olivier Vernon, those guys up front, with the back end of that defense, whether it's the linebackers, the secondary, or both?
Well, you've got some problems in the secondary, too, with injuries. Mm-hmm. They lost Lewis Dallas as their strong safety last week. He's gone for the year. Cortland Finnegan has been out the last 4 weeks. He's probably going to come back here to play. Jamar Taylor, the man who replaced Cortland Finnegan, also has been injured, and he may come back this week. And then the linebacking crew, Jelani Jenkins, who we've really found out beginning in that opener against the Patriots, is a budding superstar at the outside linebacker position. Not only is the leading tackler, he's got 99 stops, but he's also someone who can run with a tight end. And so when you look at the Patriots and think about what they bring to the tight end position, Jelani Jenkins is very important. He went out last week with a foot injury. It's unclear if he'll play on Sunday. The middle linebacker, Cole Meese, was banged up in that opener. He hurt an ankle, missed a good portion of the season, came back. Now he's got a hamstring injury. Not sure if he's going to be able to play on Sunday either. So they're very thin, two of the three starters out, and that's a real question. And if they can't get Meese, and I think especially John and Jenkins back, it'd be a very long day for this defense.
Jimmy, when opponents go south like the Patriots, they've got to deal with the heat of South Florida. But when the Dolphins come north, how much of a factor is the weather? I mean, you've experienced it as a player for the Dolphins.
Yeah, but I don't think that much. I mean, you look at my career. I played in the snowball game. I didn't like it, but I played it at Penn State. For goodness sakes, we were in the middle of the tundra there, too. And so I was used to playing in that kind of football. And, you know, Mike Wallace played for the Steelers all those years. He played at Mississippi, but then with the Steelers for years and played extraordinarily well. So it helps to practice it a day in, day out. But I don't think that's that much of a factor. You can put clothes on to warm yourself up. You know, when it's 95 degrees and 100% humidity, as it was, or something like that during that opener, you can't shed enough things to be able to get yourself comfortable on the field.
Hey, since you mentioned it, I know in watching the various specials on it and features over the years, that Don Shula, you're a great coach, one of the greatest of all time, of course. You know, still thinks back to the snowplow incident, it's tough to deal with. Having played in it, what are your recollections of that particular game? And you know, through the years, I guess there's been some mythology associated with what took place out there on the field in Foxborough.
Yeah. Well, I had one thought about that whole football game. I dropped a pass in the end zone. We lost 3-0. That's it. That's the only thought I ever have of that game. You know, the convict and Coach Myers sending him out to plow that space so a field goal would be kicked is, you know, it's part of NFL lore. I'm glad I played in the game. But my thought always is I dropped a pass in the end zone and we lost by 3 points. That's the only thing I ever think of when I think about the snowplow.
Wow.
I had lunch, by the way. I spent the afternoon with Coach Shula today. He's doing great. He's got the greatest sense of humor you've ever heard, and it's just the best of humor. I think he's 84 now, but he's doing really, really well.
Well, that's good to hear. And, you know, since you mentioned Don and you earlier referenced Joe Paterno, I mean, here you are as somebody who played with two of the icons, not only in their time but of all time. And you spoke so eloquently, in fact, at the memorial service for Joe Paterno. How much of an impact did those two individuals have on you as a person beyond the player that performed under both so well?
Well, they had a great impact on me, Bob, but both did. I always think that the person I became was because of my family, but past that, because of Joe Paterno and Don Shula. I know what's happened at Penn State is disturbing, but Joe was as moral a man as I've ever known in my life. Don Shula was the same way. And it was always, there's more to this game than just winning. Win, but win within the rules. And make sure you live your life the way that you would be proud to live it. And that's what they taught us. And I'm a much, much better person because I played for Joe Paterno and because I played for Don Shula.
Jimmy, well said. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Bob. I look forward to seeing you this weekend.
And likewise, have a good trip north.
All right, take care.
All right, thanks so much.
Bye.
Jimmy Cephalo with us, of course, a great wide receiver at Penn State and as well for the Miami Dolphins. And as a kid who grew up, the son of an Italian-American whose family emigrated from Italy to Ellis Island at the turn of the century, I can say that guys like Jimmy Cephalo were early favorites in my lifetime. Anybody who had a vowel at the end of his name and played well. And when you had Cephalo and Marino on the field, you know, regardless of what team you rooted for, my father always had a special interest in those guys, and therefore, I guess, for me to talk about Joe Paterno with Jimmy Cephalo, and an opportunity like this, even as we're looking ahead to the Patriots-Dolphins matchup this Sunday, it takes me back down memory lane as well to my own youth. The Patriots, of course, will have to deal with the Dolphins' pass rush. We didn't talk much about it with Jimmy, but Cameron Wake, Olivier Vernon, Jared Odrick, and company, they constitute a real challenge for the Pats coming up on Sunday. And earlier today in his press conference, Bill Belichick was asked specifically about the Dolphins' pass rush, what Kevin Coyles, the defensive coordinator, likes to do with his moving parts on defense, and as well, Cameron Wake in particular, a guy who wasn't even drafted coming out of Penn State. In fact, played by a different first name during his collegiate career, wound up going to the Canadian Football League after working in the private sector for a little time, and now, of course, is an NFL superstar and one of the best pass rushers in the National Football League. Let's have a listen to what Bill Belichick had to say about the Dolphins' pass rush overall and about Cameron Wake in particular.
Most of the time, they mix it up. They rush four, they rush five, sometimes six, different combinations. And they all come, corners, nickelbacks, safeties, linebackers. Sometimes they use their ends in coverage. Sometimes they don't. But they mix it up on you. They definitely spin the wheel in terms of their defensive calls.
Second and 20 for the Pats from the 22. Brady, deep drop. Under pressure. Down he goes.
Take a ticket. Boy, it's going to be a fun meeting for Cruz this week.
McKay.
There have been examples, our game, second half of the San Diego game, where they just rush four in passing situations, and they can definitely get there. I mean, they got a lot of good rushers, but they oftentimes bring more than that.
Brady needs protection, of course, with Connolly back at center, Debbie in at right guard for New England. Vollmer, by the way, back in at right tackle. Low snap to Brady in the pocket. He's under a rush. The pocket collapses, and Brady does as well. The Dolphins with another sack for Olivier Vernon and Cameron Wake.
He's a great player. He gets the edge a lot. He can come inside. He's got a good power rush. So he's got three good pitches, and he mixes them up. It's a hard guy to block.
Fourth and 10 for the Patriots. A last gasp. Brady from the gun. Got a four-man rush for the Dolphins. Tom hit as he releases. Ball comes loose. And another sack by Wake. The Dolphins can start celebrating. They recover a fumble inside the 15.
So again, the Patriots fall into Miami week one. Dolphins pass rush really wreaked havoc in the second half of that game. Patriots have since, of course, shored up things up front. Offense playing far, far better, among the best in the NFL overall in every vital category of the defense as well for the Patriots. And I think the stats are truly misleading when it comes to where the Patriots rank in a number of defensive categories. Really, all that really needs to be said is that the Patriots held Green Bay at home to 3 points in the second half and then came out and held San Diego to only 7 points offensively in that game, a win on the road after the Chargers had scored 34 and coming from behind to beat the Baltimore Ravens. So things have changed considerably, but still the Patriots know one of the constants in facing Miami is the relentless pressure of Cameron Wake and company, and the Pats are going to have to protect Tom Brady Sunday if they are indeed to win their 11th, and more importantly in 2014, maintain a beat on the top spot in the AFC and clinch the AFC East crown. That's the mission. A so-called hat and t-shirt game Sunday at Gillette Stadium. We'll have the coverage on the Patriots radio network at 98.5, the Sports Hub in Boston, and our string of affiliates throughout New England. I'll be joined by Scott Zolak for the play-by-play, and of course, joined by Kevin Collins, our producer on this show. Can't thank you enough for tuning in, downloading the podcast as well, and we hope you'll join us next week. Once again, next Wednesday from 4 to 6, we'll be back on the Patriots.com radio network, the Bob Soucy Show, from our Subway Fresh broadcast studios here at Gillette Stadium. So again, for Kevin Collins, this is Bob Soucy. Thanks so much, everyone. So long for now.
Thanks for listening to the Bob Soucy Show, exclusively on Patriots.com Radio.
Sets up with a throw to the right side. Catch made by Edelman. Turns to the end zone. Oh. And he runs it past the five. He dives to the end zone. Touchdown! And the lead for the Patriots.
Bob will be back next Wednesday from 4 to 6 p.m. with the latest news and reaction from this week's game, as well as a preview of the Patriots' next opponent.
Hand off to Ridley. Runs it right. Ridley dives to the goal line. He's in again. Touchdown, Patriots!
Log on to Patriots.com anytime to find the latest Bob Soucy Show podcasts, as well as the very latest news and information on your favorite team.
Shotgun snap to Manning. Play fake. Throw to the near side. Ball picked off by Logan Ryan. Diving break on the ball.
He's got it.
As he stepped in front of Eric Decker.
He's got it.
Patriots take over.
This place is berserk.
We look forward to hearing from you on the next edition of the Bob Soucy Show.